And our guest tonight, our special guest tonight, Stephen Quayle. We're going to talk about some incredible stories of giants. He's been doing a lot of work, including what did Admiral Richard Byrd really find at the North Pole. But when we come back, we're going to tap into Stephen Quayle's international fame by talking with him about this incredible situation of riots out of control in France and now leaking into Belgium and Germany as well. Back in a moment with Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Stephen Quayle is an author of numerous books for more than 30 years. He's been investigating ancient civilizations, giants, UFOs, and biological warfare as they relate to the future of mankind. And we're going to get into the giant part of it and maybe even some UFOs with Stephen later on tonight. But I do want to, with his breaking story of what is occurring in France and now Germany and Belgium, tap into Stephen's expertise. Stephen, 300 towns in France, it's out of control, and yet they haven't called in any of their military. What's going on?
Well, first of all, George, I think people have to get a historic perspective of why it's starting in France. And I think that if we start to look at the cities in which the rioting took place, we'll see some parallels to ancient history, believe it or not, and what's happening right now. For instance, the Battle of Tours, where Charles Martel took on Amir Abdel Arakhan, basically, who was ready to take over all of Northern Europe. Charles Martel in 732 fought the battle in which he was outnumbered 10-1. And it's fascinating to me, as you and I are talking about this tonight, that 1,273 years ago, in the very same towns that the Battle of Toulouse, or where the Duke of Aquitaine took on 10 years earlier, actually 11 years earlier, the same group of individuals, now we've got the worst rioting in France since the downfall of De Gaulle in 1968. You know, all the numbers are out there so far, but what I'm being told specifically is this was well planned. The whole idea that it was in response to two young
kids
African
who got
boys,
electrocuted, yeah.
Yeah, that's just a total scam. And I think the question that the listeners need to ask, and the obvious question that you and I can deal with, is where was Jacques Chirac in this whole thing? Because quite candidly, until day 12, he's been almost the invisible man.
I know it. I can't understand some of these leaders that during catastrophes and disasters, they just don't react in time. And still, his prime minister said today, well, we don't think it's time yet to bring out the army. The army, I mean, I would be at a point right now where they just put in curfews. You got to get to a point where you've got to shoot. You can't just let these people, even though they're teenagers, they say, run rampant through your countryside, burning and creating mayhem.
Well, first of all, we've got the lying mainstream press. Maybe we'll just call that the LMSP or something. Because, again, of the 1,200 people arrested, now this is on the BBC, only 30 of them are young people, okay? So that begs to ask the question, why is a major story indicating that it's, you know, basically just disenfranchised youth when of 1,200 arrests, only 30 of them are young? Now, we've also got 4,700 vehicles, which I don't think incorporate the 800 or 900 that are burning tonight, you know, tonight,
right,
early
now,
this morning,
as we speak.
Right now. So, you know, 5,500, we've got 100 people, police and firemen who have been hurt. And again, I have to tell you, George, this thing really stinks. Some of the sources I've talked to says signal intelligence, in other words, telecommunications, have indicated that there is a nexus, because this isn't just happening as you opened up, you know, as you've been talking in the opening introduction. This is taking place also now in Germany and Denmark, not to the same degree, but in Denmark, the youth and rioters have openly declared war on the Danish government.
Now,
they said, we're at war, their words, not mine.
Now, let's talk about France for just a moment, Stephen. I mean, here they are. These are truly disenfranchised Muslim kids. But as you say, we really don't know yet because some adults are getting arrested too. But let's for a moment assume that they are. They're just poor Muslim kids. They don't have anything going on and they got upset and now they're out of control. France didn't want to go into Iraq. France was the one nation that has been cutting side deals with Saddam Hussein. France is the country that, if any Muslim nation would favor and support, it would be them. So why is this happening to them?
Well, according to some of the signal intelligence and some of the information that's coming across my desk, it's payback time, because when you understand, we're talking about the concept of jihad worldwide. You know, we saw the introduction of that as you know, 9/11 forward. And the thing that I think that people have got to recognize, and you're asking, we'll stick with France, but concurrently with France, things are happening in Thailand, things are happening in Indonesia, Germany, Denmark, and the whole question is, can this break out in other cities? Now, again, why would you attack a nation which has been incredibly favorable to, you know,
Makes no sense.
Has held out the red carpet more. But now, from France's perspective, from the disenfranchised Muslims' perspective, France has basically put them into ghettos, you know, brought them in as a working class, and they're treated as second-class citizens, blah, blah, blah. And that's true, too. But the point is that we're seeing something here, I think, that's amazing, because in a lot of the speeches that Bin Laden gave in the past, you know, and Zarqawi and Zawahiri and others, they always go back to historic points and references in time, especially when one of Bin Laden's most famous statements is about Saladin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm trying to bring out tonight, I think it's critical to understand that while the mainstream press is giving us one perspective, to lose track of the historic perspective of the fight, and it was a fight between radical Islam, in those days it was Islam, and European or Christian Europe. We have got the word crusade being used first and foremost by spokespeople after 9/11 claiming that this is a time new crusades. And I think something has to be brought out again. We're dealing in a time period where what people used to see prophecy only in the future, you know, as you were doing shows years ago, you always look forward to the future.
Right.
Now I think we're seeing that people are starting to have their minds blown to some degree because events are taking place in the present. You can't deal with events like this and not see the reference to history. Obviously, we've got Iran now, and this plays into what we're going to say. Iran is asking or saying they're going to help the French to look into this. Well, you've got now one of the greatest empires in history. I'm not talking about modern-day geopolitics from the State Department's perspective. I'm talking about one of the nations. Obviously, Iran was Persia. When you understand ancient Persia and you understand the mindset, and quite candidly, George, I don't think people realize that that these great nations and these great civilizations, there's a lot of, and no pun intended on this word, but there's a lot of water under the bridge, and that water seems to be coming up now to the bottom of the bridge.
Do you think it's possible that because France really hasn't been pushing this European Union, it's also payback that way?
Well, absolutely. I would say if anybody wants to see the future of the European Union, and just in the last 60, 90 days, you've seen the tension rise between Britain and France. There's always been tension there, but now it's really rising. I think it's indicative of the lack of coordination. The other question that you just brought up is, where is the EU? If they're acting as a whole or a homogenous whole, why aren't others saying, look, we've got to stop this because we don't want it to spread? You still have that identity. You still have the situation. And based on statements, again, I want to share this with your listeners, that based on statements from intercepts of cell phones, computers, everything, there has been a go signal given. And that would indicate that this is not just, quote, a simple uprising. If you look at a map of France, all of France is burning. Every single major city, George, is burning.
In pieces. That's
yep.
True.
And I've been to, you know, I'd say 90% of the cities that are burning in France, I've been to personally. I can tell you it's amazing because when you even get into northern France, in the area of Brittany, and then down to the Côte d'Azur or you know, Nice and some of
Why aren't they using force, Stephen? I mean, I've got to tell you, this is a point right now. If this kind of rioting was occurring in the United States And I'm not talking about political dissent or anything like that, but this is just pure thuggery. Why aren't they out there shooting? Why aren't they saying, look, if you're going to riot, you're going to get shot. Now go home.
Well, again, you've got to get into the psychology of France because, you know, I mean, without making fun or taking pot shots at them, you know, some of the intercepts that are going on is there's a specific statement saying we will, this is a direct quote, we will feel out France to see what they will do. The French are not known for hitting a crisis head on. Therefore, we have freedom to do what we want to do. Or that's basically the statement. So you've got to ask yourself, was Jacques Chirac, is he impotent? Now, he's been vitriolic in his criticism of the United States. But the point is, who or has someone, and here's a question that I'm asking the people that know the answers to this question, who has ordered Chirac to stand down for 12 days? That's unheard of, George, even the history
Absolutely.
Of France. That's unheard of.
Look, if this happened here, Bush would have had soldiers in the National Guard out, rightfully so, to at least start taking charge of what was going on.
Well, and again, that's what is very telling about this, because, and then if you take Villepin, you see what I would say this incredible impotence, and then you get the whole picture, and it's almost like, you know, fouled up beyond all repair, and it seems like there's nothing substantial outside of concession, and that has always been, if you will, the French psyche, at least from World War One on, to try and concede. Obviously, you know, there are bitter feelings over the way France welcomed the Nazis in, not all the French, but the government at the time did. And the point is that there are some things that stand out like sore thumbs, and those sore thumbs are only going to get bigger and bigger. And if they're able to quiet and quash this or quell it for some time, the question still has to be answered. And I can tell you that this will linger on for a very, very long time because, again, are we so politically correct, I'm talking on a worldwide basis, that civilization now is held hostage to people that say, look, history hasn't been fair to us, it's payback time. And I would say that the other question is, what is the definition of civilization and from what viewpoint is it defined? And I think this is the identity crisis that France is going through right now.
Steve, what I would like to do this hour, if we can, is at the half open up the phone lines for people to chat with you about this situation and the situation in Australia where they just busted the terrorist ring there. And then we'll start fresh with your report on Giants next hour. Is that okay?
Oh, that's fine. And we've got, I think, and you'll agree because you're privy to the actual letter, we've got, I think, one of the most amazing stories to tell now on a live
absolutely
Giant. It has got to be one of the biggest stories in the history of the human race, especially as it applies to Giants. You know, a lot of people, George, just think this stuff's all fantasy. Well, they won't after we read
well,
that letter.
All right, and we'll save that for the top of next hour. Then we'll have 2 hours to talk about it.
Okay.
And it'll be clean, and that's what we'll do. We'll open up the phone lines next half hour so you can chat with Steve and I about this situation that's happening in Europe. Now, in Australia, they bust a major ring. They believe that there was going to be a huge terrorist attack. What is interesting, though, about all this, Steve, is yesterday, Douglas Hagman on his website, Homeland Security U.S., and he sent us a nice email today. He is on the mend and should be back in action in the next day or two, so I think we'll get him back on. But he said that a Southern Californian who has basically fled to Al-Qaeda was on videotape and said yesterday was London, Madrid, tomorrow will be Los Angeles and Melbourne, and here we have this huge disruption of arrests in Australia. Hagman might have been right in this one.
Well, I think Doug is to be commended. You know, he's taken a lot of hits, and a lot of people have done their best to frustrate him and, I mean, really mess with him in a major way. I don't think anybody that I've ever met, George, has paid the price a guy pays to try and get the information out. And what's fascinating to me is that it seems like every time he gets his feet or his teeth sunk into a really amazing story, somebody from the inside tries to foul it up. So, and I mean, from everything from death threats, and I'll say this quite candidly, the man has put up with so much, I think most people would have thrown in the towel a year ago. But I can tell you this, when he does his homework, and there are a lot of people that contact him, so much so that it sometimes unnerves the powers that be that he can get so much accurate information
yes.
in such a short time.
And ahead of anybody else.
Absolutely. I tell you what, and I got to say this, that he's done a remarkable job, and in my opinion, what he's done is he is a true hero in the standpoint. His motivation is to save lives, and you cannot fault a man that busts his butt and puts his life on the line to save other people's lives.
Well, and what bothers me now is he was right about Australia. What about Los Angeles?
Well, Los Angeles really comes up on the radar screen so much, and the thing is that what I'm really concerned about, if this is the season of jihad, not just the general talk, but the specific actions, as I said earlier, signal intelligence, which means that eavesdropping, if you will, the spies, the NSA, and everybody else out there, they're picking up concerted communications that basically have said, "Go." This, by the way, is one of the ways that the Australians were able to be so effective. And so, you know, Los Angeles is just absolutely, at this point, even more so than New York, is absolutely in the targets.
Well, I hope they're doing something about it here, Stephen.
Well, we've had, you know, one of the things that's my chief complaint is we have some incredibly heroic and wonderful people. I mean, absolutely, you know, guys that stay in the background because of all the security clearances. And I've been blessed to, you know, have information on what, I mean, there are mighty, mighty heroes out there. I mean, and when I say this, is the president did not lie when he talked about how many real severe plans of the terrorists had been interrupted. I mean, I know for a fact he was not lying, because I know for a fact some of the incidents which you and I have talked about on your show before, even nuclear incidents that were absolutely intercepted by some incredibly brave men. So the point is that they'll never tell us this stuff. And I think that, in my opinion, the administration would do well to once in a while tell the truth in more detail than leave, you know, everybody speculating, because that makes you, I would say, not only more grateful, but it gives you a better feel for the reality of this, because, you know, we've got terror fatigue, we've got warning fatigue, and I believe, George, that it was based on your show and us continually haranguing about the color-coding nonsense that it was changed. I really do.
Yeah, I think so too. We pushed away at it, and we kept telling people this fear mongering with this coded system was no good, and then it just seemed to fade away.
Right, and you know, I think one of the biggest things that's happened this week, and I've got to commend the head of Department of Homeland Security, which I find myself, you know, having to say, finally somebody said the truth, that it's the individual American's obligation, duty, and responsibility. There's the big word. To prepare for worst-case scenarios, that the federal government can't get there or be there in time. And I'll tell you what, that's something that I've been, you know, flapping my lips over for 30 years. And so we've had a quantum shift in seeing the warning going out. And ladies and gentlemen, we all should take that to heart, because that's a quantum shift to say you're on your own pretty much and prepare to be on your own. And that's not a bad deal.
No, not at all. Now, do you think this is Armageddon, that it's begun?
Yes, I do, but I don't think France is Armageddon. I think, you know, I made a list for you of everything that's going on, and I mean, when you take it all, just in this year, okay, I said history-making, record-breaking. Everything that we have is clustering. It's coming to a nexus. It's coming to a hub. And everything radiates out from it. And it doesn't matter if we're just talking. See, we try and cover all bases in the time we've got on the radio together. But, I mean, when you take it as a whole, there's no time that compares to it. And you've got mixed signals there. You know, even the mainstream press is using biblical terms. They use Armageddon, okay? End of the world. And you probably saw the article. I know you did, because it said, is this the end of the world? But that was the, you know, what, Financial Times or Guardian of London? Somebody who's not knowing, or excuse me, is not known for using headlines like that. They've run out of words. They've run out of metaphors. They've run out of terms to describe just what's going on. Look at, as an American, you sit by and you see everything from United Airlines and all the different pensions, American Airlines, Delphi, the potential for bankruptcy in General Motors, the Refco financial debacle, which is beyond anybody's ability, I think, to really quantify that at this point. And you see the future, and you see the hope, and you see the dreams almost wavering away. Kind of, you're waving to them as they go out on an ocean liner into the sea. So I think if you take everything, just this year we've had, and this relates to what we're talking about. Terrorism is just one of the fingers.
All right, hold on there, Stephen. We'll be right back with you, and then we'll take the rest of the phone calls now on this very important topic on Coast to Coast AM. Now we're going to take your calls now with Stephen Quayle about the situation in Europe, of course. Europe burning. And then at the top of the hour, we'll get into the subject at hand, giants, with Stephen Quayle. By the way, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific time, for you Streamlink members, we'll have our computer chat. So make sure you're there. And I'll be there. We chat for 1 hour. Questions back and forth. It's a great time. So that'll be tomorrow, 8 p.m. Pacific time. All right, we're back with Stephen Quayle. Stephen, some people have told me that the Jacques Chirac is suffering some vascular problems. Not a healthy man. Maybe this is not a good time for him, huh?
Well, let me say this. It seems like the vascular problems have come on awful suddenly, and his health is an issue, and obviously he's not running again, and Villepin is going to run, and another gentleman's going to run against him, and that's kind of, there's an internal struggle in the Parisian and French politics over who's going to be the next president of France. But again, given his vociferous nature in the weeks preceding this, you know, the burning starting the 12 days ago, I would say this again, he's still uniquely silent.
How would have old Charles de Gaulle handled this situation?
Well, de Gaulle would have handled it totally differently, and I can tell you point blank that there will be a war going on in the French political arena over this, because when you're talking about 6,000 cars, take the average price of a car, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, by the time everything is tallied up for what's burned, and not to mention the stress on the police. And the police, by the way, George, their National Police Union, the spokesman, is calling this civil war. And again, political correctness, in my opinion, will lead to a massive disruption in the European Union, and this will not cause a cohesiveness. This will absolutely be one of the spikes that drives into the heart of what the Europeans had hoped to accomplish by all joining together.
Let's go east of the Rockies and get going here. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Gentlemen, how's it going this morning?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Question, is this really is this an issue of what's the word I'm looking for? Economics, or is this like a religious issue?
Yeah.
Some places I read that it's like there's a failure of integration on the part of the family. I mean, the people rioting, or the French government. I mean, some places, oh, it's radical Islam, it's rising. I mean, is there any proof to the radical Islam part, or is this just opinion, or?
Let me tell you that this has started in the very poor areas of France when the parents of these younger kids who started the initial uprising, and like Steve said, it's growing into some adults. When they were brought here because they were cheap, poor labor. There's a danger when you begin to do that. And it started off, I think, Stephen, as the haves and the have-nots. And when you have that kind of separation, you're going to have a problem. But there are other motives involved. Go ahead, Stephen.
Well, actually, and that's one of the things that anybody that wants to start a revolution does, is they exploit class struggle. I mean, that's been a case of the recorded history, the has versus the have-nots. But based, the caller asked a good question, but based on the information that's out there, the mainstream press is not giving a realistic preview or overview of what's going on compared to what the intelligence agencies are coming up with. And if you notice the Australian terrorism incident, it was interrupted during the same time period. That still doesn't, I don't think people have got the feeling yet, Georgia, Thailand, Indonesia, and other parts of Southeast Asia are experiencing massive, massive military intervention against very radical individuals.
Okay, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Sam. I'm from Mesa, Arizona.
Hi, Sam.
And my question is, you were talking about how the government should, you know, let the public know about, you know, some of the things that are going on terrorist-wise, so that we can open our eyes, so to speak. Well, how much do you think that would help? I mean, you've heard the term, you know, a person is smart, but people are stupid. I mean, if the general public, you know, and I'm not saying that everyone's stupid, but I'm saying people are fearful of a lot of stuff. And if I think the government allowed a lot of the information that they know about go out, I think that a lot of people would panic and start, you know, doing stupid things like, you know, killing innocent people because of their race or their religion. And I mean, it's one of those things where if you give information and let the people handle it, it's unpredictable, you know.
Well, I've heard that argument, but I don't agree with it from this standpoint. The deal is it's obvious that you want to maintain the status quo, but there are ways to release information that satisfies the questions being asked, because right now we've got a divided country. If you look at the attitude towards the Iraqi war, the attitude towards the economy, everything seems to be increasing in tension, or as Jennifer Aniston said, it looks toxic. So the point is that there are things that can be told, and quite candidly, with all the secrets being kept, we're going closer and closer, in my opinion, into that time we have a head-on encounter with the abyss, and I think it's closer every day, both financially and I think on an international warfare footing we are already on, and I think at some point the walls come crumbling down.
West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, this is Ralph calling, listening on Kogo 600 kilocycle.
Hi, Ralph.
Chirac, I think, is suffering from a yellow stripe down his back.
Yeah, but that's the disease.
You can say that. I see a parallel here between these French guest workers and the millions of guest workers that Bush, Kennedy, and McCain want to bring in from the third world across our undefended Mexican border. Will we Americans someday face the same insurrection of millions of guest workers in the future?
Well, absolutely, and it's already
good
in
question.
Place.
Great question,
and by the way, well stated, and I couldn't agree with you more. The point is that we have to realize France lost their border, they lost their culture, and they lost their cohesiveness. And we're facing the same thing because it's whether it's the Aztlan movement or it's this movement or that movement, we have massive amounts of disenfranchised individuals in their mind, whether they are or not, that's open to debate.
Sure, and when you bring them in, Stephen, under the guise of cheap labor,
right,
all of a sudden you're going to have this haves and have-nots. Quite frankly, in France, these people are living in subpar conditions. They're tired of it. And then you've got opportunists, the Al-Qaedas, and who else might be involved. They pick up on this, and they fuel the fire with these people, and then everything breaks loose.
Absolutely. And this is the thing that we've discussed at length, even on your roundtable. There is a group that wants a global gulag, in my opinion. The group wants, basically, the haves and the have-mores, and they want a surf class again. What we've got is a term I coined called techno-feudalism, where we're using technology to replace, you know, the workforce, and then the workforce that we have, we want to get it as cheap a labor. The thought goes like this in the globalist mind. The United States cannot compete against Chinese laborers that will work for whatever, a dollar an hour, a dollar a day, whatever the number is. And that's a total lie. When the United States was the strongest country, when we had, in my opinion, a functioning moral foundation, when we stood out heads and tails above everybody and were grateful and thankful and weren't so self-absorbed, selfish, and materialistic, we were the envy of the world. But there were people in our government who systematically took us apart piece by piece, and we took our greatest technology, we took our smartest people, and we sent them all over the world to educate people. And now we've got, in my opinion, George, we've got the same problem facing us, as a caller says, and who knows when it'll be, as France and the rest of Europe does.
I'm telling you, Stephen, I, at this point, believe that the Illuminati has now kicked everything into high gear. They would love to see the population of this planet reduced dramatically. Some have said down to 500 million from 6 billion. They may want to use this so-called avian flu as one of the reasons to do it. I don't know anymore.
Well, I got to tell you, I agree that. And you know, given everything from the avian flu and all of the things that we're seeing, and you know my take on the avian flu is that it's not a natural occurring virus.
Right.
It's a genetically altered virus. Concurrently with the avian flu virus, the Spanish flu of 1918 was recultured. We have the mousepox find in Australia, which they called the ultimate doomsday weapon. We've got individuals out there that are so entrenched in their hatred for humanity that killing 5.5 billion people, those aren't my numbers, they're their numbers. They're serious, but everybody goes, oh, ha, 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 ha. No one would really do that. Get real. They will do that.
They would love to see things. Because, you know, they think that this planet can't sustain anymore. Now, you know what? They might be right. We may have too many people on this planet.
Well,
but this kind of genocide is just unconscionable.
Well, see, it's not so much that. It's that they've got this what I call supernatural cosmic covetousness. And again, you know, let's take the Rothschild banking interests. The Rothschild made the statement that give me control of a nation's money and I care not who writes its laws, and, you know, follow the money. Somebody just sent me an email saying talk about that. Well, you've got a continual set of historic intrigues that take place in France through the French banking, through all these guys, George. It doesn't matter, the globalists, you know. Each head of the nations usually appears at the Bilderberger meeting or the CFR Council on Foreign Relations, and they plan the world. But I got to tell you something. They have done a miserable job, and in their mind, and these are their terms, not mine, you have to get rid of the useless eaters. That's a very famous term, you know, and the way you do that is through everything from famine, and you do it through engineered calamity, and the ultimate calamity is a biological virus that has been genetically tweaked. By the way, most viruses in the early days, even the Spanish flu, nowhere in the history of it did it have the lethality of the new ones. And the reason the lethal nature of the new viruses is so great, sometimes 80-90%, like in the case of Ebola pox, Ebola and smallpox genetically combined, is because they have been designed to overcome all of the barriers that I believe God created. And now these guys, in their fury to destroy beautiful human beings, they're working overtime to come up with the ultimate doomsday weapon. And I got to tell you, the H5N1, that's there, but there are other things in their baddie bag of viruses that are absolutely astonishing in the ramifications once they're released.
Well, you know what I can't understand is they say, the CDC says, I don't believe it, I think it's blown out of proportion, but 36,000 Americans die every year from the natural flu, right? 36,000 people. If we had 500 people die from the avian flu in this country, that's it, just 500, they'd blow that thing way out of proportion, yet they don't say anything about the 36,000 that they put on their own website that they say dies every year from the flu.
Well, absolutely. And this is a Hegelian dialectic in full form. You know, the bottom line is you create a problem, and it doesn't matter if it's real or imagined or it's hyped, okay? You provide a solution, take our vaccine or do this or do that. And in taking the vaccine or whatever, then they hope that they brought about the change that they desired, okay? Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And what's happening, I'm afraid, is that the emotional well-being of Americans is absolutely being played with like a cat plays with a mouse by these people. And I got to tell you, the CDC does not have an illustrious pedigree behind it. You know, what I think we're seeing, too, is that whether it's the response to Katrina, whether it's a response to Rita, whether it's the proposed response, I got to tell you something. The word freedom rings out loud and true. And all I see these guys talking about is containment and control, more control, more control, more control, less rights for we Americans. And it's astonishing to me that people can't see what's happening. In other words, they're scaring us into surrendering the last vestiges of our freedom, of our constitutional rights, of the Bill of Rights. And there is a group that is even above the United States government that incorporates certain aspects of the government, but these guys are not going to be happy until 5.5 billion people are dead, and they work overtime. They don't stop.
You know, we haven't had a breath on this planet since 9/11. Not a breath.
Nope. And again, maybe we can just run through it, but let me just give you one. Can I do this? Because I think this, you're saying we haven't had a breath. This year, all these things we've seen, we've never seen them in 1 year before.
Well, pick it up from the tsunami of less than a year ago, December 26th.
Right. Okay, just from that time, and that's actually what I started with, okay? And I'm going to do this not in order. We've had gamma ray bursts that have absolutely messed with the weather this world, and the scientists are still fighting. Does it have any effect? We've had solar flares and coronal mass ejections that are off the scale. We've had blizzards and snowstorms that have absolutely defied historic precedent. We've had drought. We've had record-breaking earthquakes, and the truth is the December 26th quake was much larger than they admit to, and there were way more deaths. Again, containment of the truth. We've had underwater volcanic eruptions that were numerous, up to 6,000 in the last year compared to 200 the previous year. We've had concurrent volcano eruptions all over the planet. We've got epidemics that have broken out in different areas of the world, from the Ebola, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever. We've got floods now that are devastating. Obviously, we see the floods in New Orleans. That's before our eyes. Now, how about tornadoes? And how about hurricanes off the scale, out of the records? We've got absolutely the tsunami that you mentioned. We've got now famines. How many people are starving over the world? We've got some of the biggest forest fires.
Add these riots. Add the pandemic fears.
Hailstorms the size of bowling balls in China. We've got heat waves before. We've got ice storms. We've got lahar, mud flows, landslides, mudslides. We've got sinkholes. We've got the impact events. And we've got now throughout the world, as you know, the fireballs, the meteors, the comets. I mean, we are literally seeing signs in the heavens that are so pronounced. And then we've got the whole microburst of the jet stream where, you know, we're seeing F7, Category 7, the movies on TV, CBS,
yep.
In other words. But, I mean, there are already historic precedents. The boundary waters up in Duluth, Minnesota, there are actual cases of where microbursts have hit 450-mile-an-hour winds. That's off the scale. That's out of sight. We've got the whole idea of not only the natural disasters, but then we've got, and we'll get into this as it relates to Giant in the next hour, but we've got the whole alien culture shock. We've got now the Catholic Church in 5 weeks making 5 of the most profound statements.
I know. Something's going on there,
something's
Steve. Well, we'll talk about that next hour because it's dramatic all by itself.
And then if that's not enough, we've got the release of supernatural evil entities as illustrated in the book of Revelation. We're seeing people encountering the paranormal. It's almost like a Ghostbusters movie, and that's just in the last year. And I challenge anybody, you know, again, when I make this statement, we actually put a chart on our website, and you can just type in on a search engine on my website, undersea volcanoes, and they actually showed a chart. I know you and I talked about it on a previous show, but when you're talking 6,000 in 1 year, you know, underwater volcanoes, seamount volcanoes, versus a couple hundred previous years, and then you've got, you know, the talking head saying there's no increase in earthquake activity or volcanoes.
So getting back to France, do you favor them saying, if you riot, this is shoot to kill time?
Well, you got to. You know, I don't think, that's what I mean by a clash of civilization. They have to decide if the civilization that they have known all these years is worth
preserving, exactly,
defending. And if they don't, then your caller who nailed it, you know, I think they'd better go to permanent yellow striped suits.
Well, they're going to have to do it and do it right now. And let me just say that just his inaction is absolutely shocking.
And it sends a message that does not stop it. Unfortunately, evil must be resisted.
It's almost like he wants those places to burn down.
Yep, that's my take. I'm saying somebody is wanting this, and someone is stopping the reaction.
All right, stay with us, because when Stephen Quayle comes back, now we're going into some real mysteries, some giant stories, and he's got a few that will just curl you. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.